for the cost of a bus ticket, widespread protests in Brazil.
This podcast is supported by Netflix Instant Streaming. Thousands of TV episodes and movies on your computer or mobile device instantly streamed by Netflix to save you time, money, and hassle. Free 30-day trial now at netflix.com/APM.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Global Perspective on Business and Economics. Demonstrations have been flaring across Brazil in the last 24 hours as widespread dissatisfaction with government services there comes to a head. Brazil's economy had been surging, but it's now growing only modestly. At a time, the government's been pouring resources into hosting the World Cup soccer competition next year. Bruno Garces is an analyst with the BBC's Brazil service. Good morning.
Good morning.
Tell me about the match that seems to have lit this flare of unrest. It's anger about something practical.
Well, what sparked this very initially were the increase in fares in public transport in São Paulo, the country's biggest city. But then it grew to something much bigger. Now it's about corruption. It's against the World Cup. People that are claiming that Brazil, that has so much investment in the social realm, should not be hosting such an event at this time.
The big World Cup that it's hosting next year. Now, this is in the context of a Brazilian economy that had roared in recent years, but growth has been quieting down.
Exactly. The growth this year has been very timid. There is the prospect of inflation, which is something that the average Brazilian dreads, because it eats away your monthly wage. And there's also the fact that over the last decade or so, millions of people have been lifted out of poverty. So you have now an emerging middle class seeking its voice. And you also have, just as we are witnessing all over with the Arab Spring, with the protests in Turkey, with the Occupy movement, people expecting more and more from authorities and not being keen to be pushed around and hear excuses and so forth. So I think there is all that combined.
Bruno Garces at the BBC's Brazil service. Mr. Garces, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Let's get in some numbers here. The FT 100 index in London currently up 0.7%. The Nikkei in Japan closed down 0.2%. The Dow went up 109 points, 0.7% yesterday, with index futures in the U.S. up slightly now. Today, China launched its first carbon market, where Chinese companies, noted for their pollution, have to put a price on emissions. These cap-and-trade schemes have had problems gaining a foothold in the U.S. and Europe, Marketplace's China Bureau Chief Rob Schmitz reports.
China's requiring 635 companies to purchase carbon permits for trade in the new market, which will be located in the southern city of Shenzhen. Derwood Zelke is president of the Institute for Governance and Sustainable Development. He hopes it'll succeed. It hasn't worked well in other countries.
There's been cheating. There have been bogus credits created and sold in different European markets.
Anyone who's operated in China knows that cheating and bogus anything is synonymous with doing business here. So Zelke has a question for China.
Is China able to learn how to do compliance? Because if you don't have strict compliance when you're doing a trading system, it will not work.
If China is able to make its first carbon market thrive, Beijing has promised to launch a national carbon market in 2015. In Shanghai, I'm Rob Schmitz for Marketplace.
This podcast is supported by Netflix Instant Streaming. Watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on your computer, iPad, iPhone, or TV instantly. Streamed now by Netflix, a great value. Netflix Streaming has lots of movie and television options, including past seasons of House of Cards, Breaking Bad, and Arrested Development. Watch them using Netflix Instant Streaming and find thousands of other TV series and movies during your free 30-day trial at netflix.com/APM.
Learn something about the world by taking a quiz. I'm always up for embarrassing myself on national radio. Our quizmaster is Stefan Richter, editor-in-chief at The Globalist. Good morning.
Good morning, David.
Hit me with it.
So the question today for you and our listeners is that we're going to take a tour d'horizon on gold.
Gold.
How much gold has ever been produced in history? Is it the equivalent of the volume of the Great Pyramid of Gizeh, of the Empire State Building here in New York, of the Beijing Olympic Stadium, or D, About the size of two Olympic-sized swimming pools.
All right. So pyramid would be a lot. The Empire State Building would be a lot, but not as much. Beijing Stadium, a little less. And then if I think you're trying to fake me out with the size of this, I'm going to go with the Great Pyramid of Giza.
That is way off. That pyramid has 86 million cubic feet and far less gold produced.
But we've been producing gold for a long time. It's true that we tend to recycle it. I am aware of that. You melt it down, turn it into something else. But gold has been the thing for millennia.
And 85% of all gold ever produced is still around. So it's pretty amazing. But it doesn't even fill up the Pyramid of Giza.
How about the Beijing Stadium?
Beijing Stadium is actually the largest enclosed space around the world, so it's even larger than the Pyramids of Giza. So,
no, it's not.
Yes, yes. And the reason why it's in here is because the Chinese are now, since 2007, the largest producer of gold. Before then, since the 1880s, it had always been South Africa.
So, Stefan, you're saying that if I took all the gold ever produced in human history, I could shape it into a one-to-one life-size model of the Empire State Building?
That would be great, but it's still way, way off. But obviously the right answer is...
two Olympic-sized pools?
These are data provided by the London-based World Gold Council. So they would have an interest, one assumes, to aggrandize the facts or, depending on it, to keep it small so that gold is more precious. But
all right.
Anyway, not a lot.
Swimming in gold. Stefan Richter, editor-in-chief at The Globalist, thank you for digging up these numbers.
Good to have been with you.
And when the news looks like Downton Abbey as it might be parodied in The Onion, members of Britain's royal family are selling tchotchkes ahead of the birth of the royal baby. The Daily Telegraph has a piece about Prince Charles selling handmade baby shoes down at Highgrove, his country estate. He's got a little shop over there. The Center for Retail Research says merchandising for the royal birth could contribute the equivalent of $375 million to the British Treasury. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.